We're going to begin a new series, study some things in Philippians, not the whole book, but a theme that pervades the book of Philippians. So we're just going to do a little study on the presence and the working of joy. I probably don't have to work too hard to convince you that joy plays a pretty large role in the gospel. From the tidings of great joy, you know, announced over those fields of Bethlehem, fruit of the Spirit, joy is always the second thing listed of love, joy. I think it's really neat that a whole New Testament book, there are 27 of them, but a whole New Testament book, 1 John, gets written in order that your joy may be made full. That's why he wrote. Not that they would initially experience it or just know a little bit or something, but wrote the whole letter that people's joy may be made full. Paul uses the word either in the noun form of joy or verb form, rejoice. He uses it the most of any New Testament author. Words about joy or rejoicing are in the New Testament 140 times. Paul uses it more than 50. But over 30% of the references for Paul to joy or rejoicing are found in the four chapters of Philippians. Paul wrote 13 letters, but over 30% of his references to joy and rejoicing are in the four chapters of Philippians. There's 16 references in four chapters. And during the study, we'll involve and look at some other texts that speak of rejoicing or of joy, but our focus will be how joy pops up in the book of Philippians. I think it is a little surprising that Philippians has so much joy in it, has so much about rejoicing in it. Philippians is a prison epistle, which means it was written by Paul while he was imprisoned. You know, not right off the bat, probably the most joyful place to author a letter from, right? We're not sure exactly where Paul was in prison. Traditionally, it's thought that this is the Roman imprisonment that leads to the, you know, end of his life. But it could have been Caesarea, where he was there while he was waiting to appeal to Caesar, and then stays there a while after he appealed before he gets shipped to Rome. It could be Ephesus, where he's in prison. But he's definitely in prison when he writes the letter. And he is not sure whether he's going to live or die. He says that there's a possibility of both of those things in the letter itself. So he puts both. I might live, I might die. So he's not sure what's going to happen to him. And he himself feels torn about what it is that he himself desires and really wants. He hopes to stay alive so he can keep ministering to the Philippians and to others. On the other side, he desires even more to be done with it all, to depart in order to be with Christ. So he's torn between those two options. So he's got many serious unknowns, you know, lots of consequential uncertainties swirling around him. He desires to see the Philippians. He wants to serve the Philippians more. I mean, he doesn't know if that's going to happen or not. Paul also knows, this is all stuff from the letter now, he also knows that there are others out there who feel a rivalry with him. And they're preaching Christ out of what he says, out of envy and strife, because they're hoping to make Paul, you know, feel distressed because he's imprisoned and they're out there preaching Christ. So their motives are wrong and they're trying to make Paul feel bad. So that's not a situation that lends itself to joy or rejoicing, it would seem. Paul also wants to send somebody to the Philippians, who would be genuinely concerned about them. So since he can't go himself, he's in prison, he's hoping to send some servant of the Lord to the Philippians who will minister to them, who will be genuinely concerned about their welfare. And as he goes through his minds of who it is he might send, he only comes up with one candidate, Timothy. In about all of the rest, he has to say, all of them are seeking their own interests, not the things of Jesus Christ. You know, this is the Apostle Paul, first century church. And of all the people that he could send, I only have one who I'm sure will be genuinely concerned for your interests. Because all the rest of them, God bless them, they're seeking their own interests, not the things of Jesus Christ. The messenger between Paul and the Philippians, Epaphroditus, he's been very sick. In fact, he almost died. And Paul says, had Epaphroditus died, he says, that would have been for me sorrow upon sorrow. So he already has plenty of sorrow. This would have been just like one more thing, like the, you know, the sorrowful straw that broke the camel's back. So he said God was merciful in that Epaphroditus didn't die, but he's been very sick. So that's not a real joyful happening. In encouraging the Philippians to press on, it's in Philippians that there's that very famous passage about wanting to gain Christ and attain to the resurrection of the dead, and just forgetting what lies behind, I press on in order to, you know, attain to the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. In encouraging the Philippians to press on, though, he also has to tell them, and he says, I tell you this amidst weeping. I've also told you this lots of times, that there are many who walk as enemies of the cross of Christ. I tell you that even weeping, that there are many, that's how they're living out their Christian life, as enemies of the cross of Christ. Plus, there's other issues. Not all the Philippians are getting along with each other. He has to encourage them to, you know, live in harmony with each other. The support that Paul himself receives from the church hasn't always been very strong or very frequent. So it would seem that Paul would have plenty of reasons to not have much joy, to not be doing a lot of rejoicing. He certainly has enough trouble and he has enough sorrow to justify a less joy-filled letter than what Philippians is. And so whatever else we might say about this theme of joy in Philippians, we certainly can't say that the presence of joy is there. There's a lot of rejoicing in Philippians because everything is just really easy right now, and just, you know, it's just a really happy time. It's summer time and the living is easy. And so that makes for a joy-filled letter. So it's not that the circumstances automatically and very quickly explain why there's so much joy and so much rejoicing. Yet I want to be kind of careful as I say that, because it would be easy to, you know, for then the preacher to say, the important lesson here is that joy and rejoicing should not be dependent upon earthly circumstance. I want you to all write that down. That would be an easy lesson to draw, because Paul didn't have easy, pleasing earthly circumstance, and yet he had lots of joy. So our joy, our rejoicing should never be dependent upon earthly circumstance. But something that's really powerful and really neat about joy, I hope we touch it multiple times kind of as we do the brief study. In part, joy and rejoicing is something that comes from another quarter and gets brought to relationships, gets brought to situations and circumstance. So it comes from someplace else and you bring it with you. And whether the circumstance or the relationship is easy or hard, whether it's going really well or going poorly right at the moment, whether the situation is wanted or unwanted, joy can be brought to it. So it isn't dependent upon the circumstance or the relationship. And yet also, at the same time, in part, joy is found in circumstances, and found in relationships, found in certain things happening. So joy is often connected to people, to knowing them and to being in relationship to them. Our rejoicing is often connected to things that are going on and happening. So you get this two sides to joy that almost seem to be in conflict with each other. In one sense, it's not dependent on the circumstance or the people. It comes from a different quarter and it's brought in. In another way, joy arises and is found because of what happens in relationship and circumstance. It's a very interesting thing. I think it's really neat. And we'll explore that probably multiple times. Today, I just want to introduce us to the thought and a little bit to the text of Philippians. Just get us thinking about it a little. So I've assembled a little list, all from Philippians, and they're words right out of the text, so I've done a considerable amount of editing for today. Just a list from text in Philippians where joy or rejoicing gets mentioned, where Paul pens it. It's a list of situations, a list of happenings, a list of relationships, a list of issues, all of which for Paul were somehow connected as he talked about that issue or that situation or that relationship, that happening. He found it appropriate to mention joy or to mention relationship, to mention rejoicing. And I suppose the very simple goal is that we would have joy and we would know rejoicing connected to the same set, the same kind of relationships and happenings and circumstances that, as Paul puts them, when he talks about the situation, he talked about it, I had joy there. I rejoiced in that. That joy for us would be connected and found and known in similar things. So in coming weeks, we're going to examine these passages more closely. I just want to throw a list at you today and get you thinking about it. But I hope it's useful to see the list. There are going to be 10 things. Just to see, Paul had joy and rejoicing connected to all those things. Again, it's only 4 chapters. And so I hope it's useful to see the list. Have you ever known someone, and you could pick different things, I picked anger. Have you ever known somebody for whom anger seems to pop up in all kinds of places? You know, you're in a restaurant with him or her, and they're mad about something. Something's happened in the restaurant, now they're mad. Or they're maybe not in the rest of their home watching TV. Not in a public place, they're just at home watching TV, and now they're mad about something. Maybe with their friends. And there's something about being with their friends that, you know, makes them mad. On the other side, they seem to find reason to be mad when they're with strangers, too. When they're at the office, they get mad about stuff. So they find stuff at the office to be mad about. When they're engaged in their hobby, you know, they find something even in their hobby to be mad about. No matter where they are or who they're with, they always seem to find something to be mad about. You're all looking very happy, by the way. And if you're ever with that kind of person who's like that, you're tempted sometimes to say, to realize the other person is now mad about something again, well, now what's your problem? It seems like there's always something. It's too hot, too cold, too bright, too dim, and too loud, too soft. Something will make you mad. In Philippians, it's kind of like that. Except it's not anger, it's joy and rejoicing. And I want us to say that as you see this list, so now what's making you joyful? You know? Why do we have to rejoice now about this? So I hope that the list makes you think about that. And again, we'll examine all the things more closely. I'm just going to, you know, linger long enough to comment simply on them. So put the first one up there, Jordan. Paul says, prayer with joy for you. Offering prayer, you know, for you with joy. So the issue here is he's just prayer for fellow saints, people that he's in relationship with, that he lives among, that he loves, that he's trying to serve in Christ's name, people that he prays for. The prayer that he prays for them no doubt includes requests, probably thanksgiving, probably intercession. The scripture talks about how prayer can be one of the ways where you labor, you know, for people to grow in Christ. So there can be some work in it. But the prayer that Paul is offering for the Philippians is with joy. So just praying for others, for Paul, was with joy. There was joy connected to it. So I just want you to catalog that. For you, praying for people is always boring, tedious thing. You have to know in the back of your mind. For Paul, the prayer for others was with joy. If I were to give personal testimony, I would certainly say that my prayer for many of you, this is accurate to it. Prayer is there, whether it's request or intercession, laboring for the Lord on your behalf, it's with joy. So it's right there at the start of Philippians. Number two, joy in the faith. There are some, if you ask that person about their faith, they would tell you about certain happenings in their life, certain circumstances, certain relationships. Maybe they pray. Maybe they go to Bible study. Maybe they go to church. They're involved in some ministry. So if you ask them about their faith, they would tell you about these things in their life. That's kind of like part of their faith. But if you ask them about their joy, they would tell you about different happenings in different circumstances. If you ask them about their joy, they tell you about sports or shopping or fishing. They would tell you about gadgets. The thing I've been happy about this week is my new gadget, actually. They would tell you about going to parties. Whatever it might be, this list of the things of joy in their life would be a very different list than the things of faith in their life. There wouldn't be much overlap between the two lists. For Paul, the things of faith, the happenings of faith, were things of joy, were happenings of joy. So for him, there was joy in the faith. There was overlap between joy and the rejoicing and the things of faith. Number three, make my joy complete by. Here's the situation. Joy is already present, but it can be increased. It can be perfected. It can be completed. It can get bigger, grow larger. And it can be increased by certain things happening. Here it's kind of very much dependent upon the circumstance and the situation. If these things happen, the joy will be made complete. If they don't happen, there's still joy present, just not perfected yet. Not all that it could be. Joy is something that's meant to increase. Again, I feel like I've met people who were saved 24 years ago. That day is 24 years ago is remembered with great joy. And since that joyful day 24 years ago, been flatlined ever since. Well, that's great 24 years ago, but how about an upward trend in it? Or like a 4% return on it or something. Let it be made complete. Let it be made full. And maybe some of the things that need to happen for it to be made complete aren't happening. So Paul talks about that. Number four, share my joy with you. Share your joy with me. Joy can be shared. If you have it, you could keep it to yourself. Or you could share it with others. You can do both. And Paul chooses the joy that he has to share it with others. But there's something very reciprocal here too. It's me sharing my joy with you, but then you sharing your joy with me. And he wants it to go both ways. He wants it to be reciprocal in the sharing. So it's possible that you don't have joy to share. Well, I'd be willing to share it, I just don't have any. But it's also possible to have it, but you don't share it. That's possible. You don't share it with anybody. It's also possible that the sharing of joy can be one way. I share my joy with you, you never share any of yours with me, or vice versa. It can be one-sided. And Paul speaks of the fact that it can be shared, would like it to be reciprocal. Number five, receive them in the Lord with all joy. When it's time to receive others, the reception is better if you can do it with joy. I think if you think about that, you know that to be true. I mean, if you're negative, grumpy, crabby, critical, how does your reception go? If you came in today that way, I wonder if it's Bronson, how do you think we're staying? He's usually crummy, you know, and I don't like this weather. When's it going to rain again? Or whatever. If you're just kind of grumpy and negative, no joy, then you would walk out most likely. I didn't get anything out of that, right? I didn't find anything to receive. So there's something where Paul says the receiving of others in the Lord and things of the Lord and in ministry that the Lord has given them, that goes better if there's joy in the mix. So he says, receive them in the Lord with joy. Number 6. My beloved brethren, my joy and crown. It's a very great thing here, almost scary, I think, in its greatness. But here you have Paul calling other people, other persons. He's calling them my joy. Probably this is something that parents can relate to. Kids, they're just a joy to me, type of thing. Not just because they just got an A on the test or won the sports game or did something for the first time. Not just for that reason, just who they are. That they're there, they're a joy. Paul says it about fellow saints. About fellow saints who are loved, beloved brethren. But he's willing to call those people, they're my joy. Who they are in the Lord is joy to me. Very great thing. Number 7. In this I rejoice and will rejoice. It's a very good thing to have the ability to rejoice in things that merit rejoicing. Because it's possible for there to be something there that merits rejoicing and you can't enter in. You miss it. Not that there isn't sufficient reason or genuine truth or goodness there, but you can't enter into it. You can't receive it. So things that merit rejoicing, to say, in this I rejoice. And here also, not only to rejoice in the moment, but to project it into the future, the will, future tense. Some things that you know are coming. And when those things get here, I know I'm going to rejoice. I will rejoice in those things. They're most certainly coming. When they get here, I will rejoice. Connected, of course, to hope in the Christian life. I hope maybe some things spring to mind right now for you. Kind of like, I know some things that are coming. When they get here, I'm going to be glad. Number 8. Probably one that you knew from Philippians, rejoice in the Lord. Many seem to rejoice only in things that they can see. Here, the rejoicing is in one that you can't see. But to rejoice in one whom you can't see doesn't mean that the joy is diminished. In fact, rejoicing in one whom you can't see can cause very great joy. Jump to Peter. Having not seen him, you love him and rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, though you don't see him now. So here's the ability to rejoice, you know, not just in the things that you can see and touch and feel, but to rejoice in one who can't be seen by us. And of course, it's joy in the Lord, that he himself is, to use this phrase from one of the Psalms, he is my exceeding joy, the Lord himself. And also, of course, joy in the Lord is a joy that's not dependent on circumstance or happening. If it's joy that's in the Lord, whether it rains tomorrow or not, whether things go well tomorrow or not, you know, whether you walk faithfully or not tomorrow, the Lord will be the same. So joy in him is a joy that's untouched, you know, unchanged by circumstance in the course of earth. Number 9. I rejoice in the Lord that you for me. I love the intertwining here. The rejoicing is in the Lord. So there's the Lord in the picture. But the rejoicing in the Lord is because of you. So it's rejoicing in the Lord, but it's because of you. And it's about things that you did for me. So there's this intertwining of the Lord and of others and, you know, in your own person. They're woven together here in something that happened between Paul and the Philippians. So he says, I rejoice in the Lord that about you doing such and such for me. It's a very cool thing. And then finally, last one. Finally, my brethren, rejoice. Every now and then, probably all of us, what comes at the end? What's it all mean? Where is it all going to end up? Type of question. And it's good to know, it's appropriate to say, all flesh is grass. It's appropriate to say, you know what? You know, my days are like grass, flourishing today and thrown into the furnace tomorrow. Appropriate, good to know that about, you know, your days. It's appropriate to sing sometimes. All my trials, Lord, soon be over. Good to sing that, appropriate. But you don't sing, all my joy, Lord, will soon be over. Because at the end, finally, where does it end up? The joy is still present. The rejoicing goes on. The trials might pass away, kind of, but our fleshly life has to give way to spiritual life. But the rejoicing doesn't end. So finally, rejoice. You know, where's it going to end? Going to end in joy. And Paul, of course, this is the place where he says, I'll say it again if you need it to me. Again, I say, rejoice. So it's a neat list. Again, all those are right out of the text of Philippians. Joy pops up in many places. I think you might ask yourself, does joy pop up for you in all these places? So if you were writing a 4-chapter letter, might you put this many references in it to joy and rejoicing? Because as you just touch different things, different happenings, circumstances, relationships, you got to just add on there, out with joy. It's amidst rejoicing. There's joy here. So it pops up in a lot of places. And I think the Lord works on all of us to increase our lists. See, because maybe you rejoice that the gospel is going to China. You hear that, and man, you walk out, you know what? I am joyful, you know, as I hear about how the gospel is going to China. But in your prayer for fellow saints, there's no joy. Unless they're the people in China, I suppose. But you know, your prayer for others is not with joy. Or maybe your prayer is with joy, but you never share it with anybody. So I don't do that kind of thing. I don't share my joy. Maybe you have joy, just not very much in things of faith. Like I have things of faith and I have things of joy. There's just no overlap between them. So I do faith on some days and I do joyful things on other days. But there's not joy in the faith. You know, maybe you have joy in the Lord, it's just people you can't stand. The last thing you would ever do is call some other saint my joy. There isn't such a thing for you. On the other side, maybe you have joy in your fellow saints. But you have little joy in the Lord because you can't see him. And kind of just the fact that you can't see him, well, I don't know how to have joy in something I can't see. So you can, you know, do your own little mix and match of the things in the list. And you probably realize some of them I know joy in, but how about all 10 of them? You know, all of them get mentioned. And so what we're going to do in the study is work through that list, and we'll bring in some other scriptures occasionally, but just examine in a deeper way the presence of joy, the working of joy, the influence that joy brings in those different places where Paul mentions it. I think it's good to be a joyful Christian, and we'll be talking about what that means. But I hope just seeing the list, again, just the intro today, just stirs you a little bit, that it pops up in lots of places. It's good to be people for whom joy pops up and rejoicing pops up.